One of the reasons it is so hard to produce convincing explanations for extinctions is that it is so very hard to exterminate life on a grand scale. As we have seen from the Manson impact, you can receive a ferocious blow and still stage a full, if presumably somewhat wobbly, recovery. So why, out of all the thousands of impacts Earth has endured, was the KT event so singularly devastating? Well, first, it was positively enormous. It struck with the force of 100 million megatons. Such an outburst is not easily imagined, but as James Lawrence Powell has pointed out, if you exploded one Hiroshima-sized bomb for every person alive on Earth today, you would still be about 1 billion bombs short of the size of the KT impact. But even that alone may not have been enough to wipe out 70% of Earth's life, dinosaurs included. The KT meteor had the additional advantage, if you're a mammal, that is, that it landed in a shallow sea just 10 meters deep, probably at just the right angle, at a time when oxygen levels were 10% higher than at present, and so the world was more combustible. Above all, the floor of the sea where it landed was made of rock rich in sulphur. The result was an impact that turned an area of sea floor the size of Belgium into aerosols of sulfuric acid. For months afterward, the Earth was subjected to rains acid enough to burn skin. In a sense, an even greater question than that of what wiped out 70% of the species that were existing at the time is how did the remaining 30% survive? Why was the event so irremediably devastating to every single dinosaur that existed, while other reptiles, like snakes and crocodiles, passed through unimpeded? So far as we can tell, no species of toad, newt, salamander, or other amphibian went extinct in North America. Why should these delicate creatures have emerged unscathed from such an unparalleled disaster? Asks Tim Flannery in his fascinating Prehistory of America, Eternal Frontier. In the seas it was much the same story. All the ammonites vanished, but their cousins, the nautiloids, who lived similar lifestyles, swam on. Among plankton, some species were practically wiped out, 92% of foraminiferans, for instance, while other organisms like diatoms, designed to a similar plan and living alongside, were comparatively unscathed. These are difficult inconsistencies. As Richard Forte observes, somehow it does not seem satisfying just to call them lucky ones and leave it at that. If, as seems entirely likely, the event was followed by months of dark and choking smoke, then many of the insect survivors become difficult to account for. Some insects, like beetles, Forte notes, could live on wood or other things lying around, but what about those like bees that navigate by sunlight and need pollen? Explaining their survival isn't so easy. Above all, there are the corals. Corals require algae to survive, and algae require sunlight, and both together require steady minimum temperatures. Much publicity has been given in the last few years to corals dying from changes in sea temperature of only a degree or so. If they are that vulnerable to small changes, how did they survive the long impact winter? There are also many hard-to-explain regional variations. Extinctions seem to have been far less severe in the southern hemisphere than the northern. New Zealand, in particular, appears to have come through largely unscathed, even though it had almost no burrowing creatures. Even its vegetation was overwhelmingly spared, and yet the scale of conflagration elsewhere suggests that devastation was global. In short, there is just a great deal we don't know.